Of course, we have an interesting situation down in southern Minnesota. First of all, we're going to have a special election to fill the late U.S. Representative Jim Hagedorn's Minnesota 1 seat with the old boundary. That's coming up later this year. But then, as well in November, we're going to have a brand new election for the Minnesota 1 race with the brand new district that happened with the redistricting. A lot of people are getting into this race on both sides of the aisle. Joining us right now is one of the people that's running for the DFL side, the DFL Democrat of the day. Jeff Ettinger served as the CEO of Hormel from 2005 to 2016. He announced earlier this month that he is going to run for the Minnesota 1 seat in the special election as a DFLer. Jeff, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
I'm excited to be your Democrat of the day, Matt. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I got to admit, I'm a fan. Patrick, our producer, can tell you this. I love spam. It's one of my guilty pleasures. I love that. You did it. I will say, I'm actually kind of a fan. I'm a business major. You ran Hormel very well in your tenure there. You did a lot of really smart things when you were in charge of that company.
Oh, thank you, Matt. We had a great team. It was always fun to be working toward a common goal with a team like that. We were able to enjoy success in the marketplace. We added over 3,500 jobs. We made the company more sustainable. And maybe most importantly, we shared in that success with the whole team through profit sharing and a stock option grant for everybody.
You have all the success there. I mean, and quite literally, you could sail off into retirement, not really have to worry about it because you've got a pretty good legacy with that. But then you make this decision, you're going to run for the Minnesota 1 seat. Talk a little bit about what was behind your decision to do this.
Absolutely, Matt. So I mean, like a lot of folks, I look at our overall situation in our country and we're faced with some major challenges. And it just seems like our leaders in Washington have been either unable or unwilling to address them. I'm really frustrated by the polarization and the hostility, the lack of respect, and the lack of results. You know, and at a local level, I was really disappointed by Congressman Hagedorn's sort of dismissive, one-sided representation of the district for the last 3 years. And I was outraged by his vote not to certify after the attack on our Capitol. So when the special election was declared and Dan Feehan, who I had supported in the past, chose not to run, I kind of had a choice. I can continue to sit on the sidelines and kind of complain to my friends and family, or I can jump in and join the race and try to do something about it.
You bring up the idea of representing only the people that voted for you. That's not the only district. I've heard about that up in Tom Emmer's district. I've heard about that up in Pete Stauber's district, that the modern Republican mentality is, I'm here to serve only the people that voted for me. And that's not what it is. You're running to represent everyone in the district and help everyone in the district, not just the people that vote for you. That is actually, when you think about that standard and how that's the common standard right now with a lot of Republicans, that's kind of a betrayal of what that office is supposed to be about.
I totally agree with you, Matt. I mean, I think my goal would be to be a respectful, inclusive, effective representative like Tim Walz was during his 12 years here. You know, we didn't always agree on everything, but he would always listen. He was respectful. He was fact-based. And even when I first moved to the community over 30 years ago, Tim Penny was the same way. Disappointment, as I said, to have representation be different this last time. And honestly, from what I've heard from the candidates on the other side, I would expect more of the same, the sort of winner-take-all mentality if one of them ends up winning.
Oh, I think you're exactly right on that. I've been listening to what they've been saying in their campaigns. And not only that, but yeah, as you brought up, I think that there is an awakening after January 6th that no. We have elections. There has winners. You know, sure, if you have something that's legitimate, you can contest it, but there's nothing legitimate about this. This was an attempted overthrow of the government. And the people that went along with that, they should be held accountable. And unfortunately, it does seem like that as well is a common mentality on the other side of the aisle that there's nothing wrong with storming the Capitol now and then.
It's just outrageous. I mean, it was contested 60 times. And 60 times, judges from all different appointments, including judges that had been appointed by Trump, rejected the challenges. The U.S. Supreme Court had two shots at taking on the challenge and rejected the challenge. So, I mean, you have to ultimately respect the process and move on. And clearly that's not what happened with the rioters that day. But, you know, you could say, well, that was back a year ago in January. The continuing problem is the people who still deny that Biden was rightfully elected and still cite that, oh, we need to change our voter laws to restrict more people because of that false thing that happened that day.
Absolutely agreed. Absolutely agreed. Jeff Ettinger is joining us right now, Minnesota One candidate for the special election coming up here later this summer. Let's talk a little bit about what you can bring to the table here. Now, I'm of course, as well, I'm a big fan of Hormel Corporation. Many corporations your side would have moved to a larger city, a larger state, or maybe a different place a long time ago. You guys have stayed down in Austin. You've been down there, part of southern Minnesota. But it gives you a really good perspective. I mean, you've got, you know, the Mayo Clinic. You've got other businesses that are down there that have this, you know, very strong international presence, but also have a very local presence as well. Talk about that perspective and how that can help you in representing all of Minnesota One.
Well, I definitely, there are things from my time at Hormel that I think I learned that would be beneficial to what goes on in Congress. We clearly had a lot of involvement with local agriculture. We offered health care to all of our employees. And definitely we're a major player in the global scene. And then, you know, I retired from the company 5.5 years ago. I've been involved since with the Hormel Foundation, which is another great institution here in southern Minnesota. And we've been involved with childcare, improving waterways, enhancing parenting resources, and big time with education. We've helped the local district create new science labs, a new music center, and we've created an innovative scholarship program whereby all graduates from Austin can go to Riverland and get a 2-year degree from Riverland Community College.
Mm. Well, and that's, I love that. I mean, the idea of community colleges and technical child colleges, opening those up for cheap education for people to be able to advance themselves in a career, I think has always been a good idea.
You know, if you drive around Minnesota, you see places all over the place, signs, help wanted, 20 plus an hour, bonuses, et cetera. So there's clearly a mismatch in our country right now between the positions and the skills. I feel we need to seize this moment and support 2-year technical and skills programs.
Let's talk about, you talk about the farmer there. Margins have never been tighter. It just is a continuing cycle. What are some of your ideas about helping the local agricultural base down in Minnesota One?
You know, that's been one of the fun things about getting out into the district and having a chance to start to talk to people. Some of the ideas I've heard, first of all, ensuring broadband access. I'm on the Governor's Council for Economic Expansion, and that was one of our priority recommendations this fall, was broadband throughout the state. I think we ought to look at offering credits for adopting green and regenerative farming practices. I think we should be providing service and aid for new farmers. I've heard that several times, that it's really challenging to become a new farmer, even for somebody who's dedicated and willing to do it. And we potentially could encourage these new farmers through amended gifting rules or donation credits on transfers from retiring farmers.
I like all those. Those are great ideas. I don't know why we don't have more people championing those. Those sound fantastic. Do you feel as if it's, I mean, is just, can we save the family farm? Do you feel, I mean, there's so much push now to everything, you know, kind of this large, you know, farming industry that the family farmer, the local farmer, that they're dwindling more and more. You do, you know, if it sounds like you've got a plan here that could actually help preserve a lot of those farms.
Well, I think these things could definitely help in Washington. And I think it actually it goes with some of the trends. I mean, what we observed when I worked at Hormel is there's just been a growing audience in the country for local farms, organic, antibiotic-free, natural. And so these are much more conducive to the smaller family farm operations. I think we need both. I mean, I think we need efficient, larger operations to be able to provide at scale. But I do think there's great opportunities for family farms in these other areas as well.
You brought up broadband, and one of the things obviously we've seen a lot of in the last, you know, the 2 years with the pandemic is broadband, obviously a big help to the medical industry. It's something we do need to expand out. Not only that, help in the education community, business expansion, obviously, as well. You're going to have the number one hospital on the planet in this district here. Talk about healthcare, because I think that there are some issues that have been brought forward, some you know, areas we need to work on in regards to the medical field and medicine as a whole for the American people after this last 2 years of pandemic.
Oh, that's a great question, Matt. I mean, clearly, you know, there's been the strong initiative to create more coverage through the Affordable Care Act, and that's been an improvement, although there's still folks that either don't have any coverage or really are faced with really catastrophic problems if they run into a major medical expense. I think the next step really does need to be in the area of costs and in the area of transparency, so that the patient kind of knows what the options are, knows what's being suggested. It's, you know, kind of one of the few things in life that we purchase as blindly as we have to purchase. And I think that kind of thing could help.
Another issue that's come to light, and this is kind of, as I was talking a little bit earlier about the nurses and, you know, the great employment resurgence that's been going on the last year. One of the big things that's basically driven people from their jobs is daycare. It's something that it doesn't matter if you're in the biggest city in your district or on the smallest town in your district. The cost of daycare in this day and age is so prohibitive for people to even go get a job that actually it's cheaper for them to stay at home and just watch their own kid than it is to go get a job and work. Talk a little bit about that, because that obviously is something from your business side as well. You probably have some experience dealing with, you know, how do we make sure that there's an affordable option out there for workers?
Now, daycare is something I hear from almost everybody I talk to. And if you think about economic expansion, I mean, it's really hard to envision how that happens if people don't have access to quality daycare. It is a tricky problem. I mean, it's, you know, on the one hand, the folks who have the children and who need the services either can't find it or find that it's very expensive. But it's not like the providers are making money hand over fist. And it's not like the child care workers are well paid or you know, they deserve to have a standard of living that's better as well. So it's a complex problem that I definitely plan to dig into, but it's one that if we can't figure out a solution to it, I think it is going to be a problem for everyone.
It does bring up an interesting point here with this, you know, as we're looking at this special election. Obviously, you're under the old boundaries of Minnesota 1, that will be the boundaries you're working under the special election. The new boundaries will not kick in until the November election here. How does that affect how you're approaching this race right now?
I mean, it is an interesting, I mean, here I'm new to the political world anyways, and to have this sort of unique three-step gauntlet, if you will, of a special election primary on May 24th, and then the final of that in August, the same day as the primary of the regular election in the new district, and then finally the final election in November. I got out into the district last Saturday, and one of the places I went is Goodhue, which is not in the current district, but is going to be in the new district. And so it is complicated in that regard. But, I mean, my philosophy in terms of running is that, that ultimately I hope to serve this district on a permanent basis. I think it's important to be part of the special election process to get that going. And so I plan to be in all three stages of the gauntlet.
I got to tell you the truth. You talked about the candidates on the other side of the aisle. Not really impressed. As a matter of fact, a little disappointed, to say the least. I've been very happy. The DFL is putting up some very strong candidates here. I think their feeling is that we had Governor Walz representing Minnesota 1. DFLers can win down there, and they can do so by being just really good DFLers. And I think that just talking with you right now, it just shows you, there's a lot of great quality DFLers down there that I think have that mass appeal that can easily win that district.
I totally agree. Obviously, the seat over the last 30 years has gone back and forth between the parties, and even in the off years, I mean, Dan Feehan very close to winning it twice, so it's definitely a winnable district, and I do think one of our candidates can emerge, and I hope I'm the one.
Obviously, once again, you've got the primary coming up, the special election to fill this seat. I'm going to drive people. If you would like to volunteer, donate, help your campaign at all coming up, what's the website they should go to get more information about you?
Matt, they should go to EttingerForCongress, kind of all one word, .com. It's more of a placeholder site for now, but by mid next week, it'll be a robust site with all sorts of things on it. But it definitely can take both volunteer requests and donations right now.
EttingerForCongress.com. I'll link to everything. That's EttingerForCongress.com. I'll make sure I link to everything a little bit later on. It is kind of a treat getting to talk to a guy that ran the company that made Spam, because I do love Spam. As a matter of fact, I just bought some today. And I'm going to make up some Korean egg sandwiches this weekend, and Spam works perfect for that. So as a hero of mine, you ran the Hormel Corporation's a hero of mine. I appreciate your efforts in keeping that company going down there.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Matt. It's a pleasure to meet you.
My absolute pleasure. Jeff Ettinger, once again, EttingerForCongress.com, EttingerForCongress.com.